Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is July 9th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's episode is titled Market Volatility Ahead. That is what we are forecasting, and we're going to get to that here shortly. This is episode 95A of the Capital News podcast, sort of going a little bit out of order. I usually reserve the economic podcast for our letter B podcast, but I'm probably not going to get to that today. So I'll do some catch-up, but I didn't want to put a 95B out there, and everybody's looking, well, where's 95A? So I'm just transplanting that today, so that's for the, some of that confusion. 95A is actually going to be about some economic news for today. I do believe on yesterday's podcast, I mentioned that Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, is set to testify this week. I believe I may have said erroneously that he was going to be testifying today and tomorrow. My apologies. He will be testifying tomorrow and Thursday. Nevertheless, the markets were still on pins and needles in anticipation of every word that this man is going to utter tomorrow and Thursday. This is ridiculous. This is not a free market capitalistic system. You do not wait for one person to make a decision, whether that be somebody at a central bank, whether that be the president himself, whether that be a prime minister. This is shenanigans. This is ridiculous. It's not how it's supposed to work. But nevertheless, he will be up there on Capitol Hill testifying before the Senate and before the House this week. And you better believe all of the markets are going to move. The stock markets will move. The bond markets will move. Commodities will move. Currencies will move. It's basically becoming a race to the bottom when it comes to currencies, when it comes to yields on bonds. $12 trillion and counting in negative yielding debt around the world. Obviously, the vast majority of that is government issue paper. Send them your money, and when you get it back, you're going to get less back than what you gave them. How do you even come up with this stuff? This is a bunch of junk. This is junk economics that we have been dealing with. And everybody's fine with it. Now we're going to get another criminal in the ECB. Christine Lagarde. She is the managing director of the IMF. Although, after consulting with the ethics committee, if you can believe this one, they said, well, you should sort of step down from actually acting as the managing director of the IMF since you're under consideration for becoming the next president of the European Central Bank. She's a criminal. They're all criminals. Yet somehow there's an ethics committee. Okay, well, I guess she's at least listening to that for the time being. But she's absolutely fine with negative interest rates and thinks it's a fine and dandy idea. And of course, we have the ECB once again reiterating that they are going to do whatever it takes, whatever's necessary, to stimulate Europe. Because we talk about a lot of these economic numbers here on a daily basis. They're rolling over, folks. They're rolling over. They're not getting any better. Not to mention, you still have Donald Trump and company, who may be slapping more tariffs on the European Union, maybe on as much as 4 billion goods here shortly. Plus, don't forget that the Trump administration kicked the can down the road when it comes to actually really going full bore against the European Union and going and really hitting hard the auto sector of the European Union and Japan. So we'll see when that comes to fruition. If it does. I would imagine it would. He's the tariff man. He loves tariffs. His right-hand man, his little sidekick, Peter Navarro, who should be fired, by the way, loves tariffs. Thinks they're the best thing ever. There's no negative effect to the United States of America, or anybody else for that matter, in this country. Nope, businesses don't pay it. Consumers don't pay it. It's just a windfall for Uncle Sam to collect all that revenue, and everybody else and their mother overseas is paying it. It's not how it works. But they say it to you with a straight face. It's ridiculous. But that's where we are. So with that, the S&P closed up 4. The Dow lost 22.5 points. The NASDAQ gained 43, getting back a lot of what it lost yesterday. The Russell 2000, the small cap index, gained 1 point. Good for them. The Dow Jones Transports continued its decline, losing another 0.7%. The New York Stock Exchange traded relatively flat for the day. Again, not much excitement here in the markets because the markets don't know what to do. because they're waiting for one idiot to move his mouth tomorrow and Thursday. This is unbelievable. We have oil, caught a little bit of a bid, $58.70 a barrel for WTI. Brent crude is trading at $64.80. Gold remains under $1,400 an ounce, trading at $1,394 an ounce. Silver trading at $15.07. Uncle Sam's U.S. 10-year Treasury gained a little bit. It's now yielding 2.054%. We were saying yesterday how some major banks were coming out and issuing some warnings that there might be a reversal in what has been taking place in the bond market. That's to say that yields could surprise to the upside. Interesting. The Federal Reserve, everybody's hoping and anticipating that they cut interest rates, yet, whoa, you have some major banks coming out and say there could be an unwinding of this phenomena, and you could have rising interest rates. This is what we have been talking about here, folks, for a long time. This is what we wrote in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, back when it was published in 2015, that if we do not solve the problems that we have created, and that we have allowed the Federal Reserve to create, and that we have allowed our politicians to create, if we do not solve them, the market will do so for us. We can attempt to be as orderly as possible, working together, being adults, or the market will just have its way with everybody. It will be ruthless because it doesn't care who you are, where you live. Well, that's what's coming. That is basically, if you read between the lines, what some of these banks are forecasting or what they're warning. But despite the fact that maybe the Federal Reserve will come to the rescue, I mean, they're throwing a hissy fit. They're crying like they do. They want the Federal Reserve to come back and quote-unquote rescue them, to get the stock market higher than what it already is. It's making record highs on an economy that's slowing down, on a global economy that's slowing down, yet somehow stock prices are just supposed to be going up, 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 and up. It makes no sense whatsoever, but that's what they want. So nevertheless, you have these banks coming out and saying, all right, listen, there might be a reversal. What does that mean? That means the markets are saying, look, enough of this. Rates got to go up. It's going to happen one way or the other. This bubble was going to be pricked one way or the other. It was going to be either at the hands of the Federal Reserve increasing interest rates, going through quantitative tightening, which was inevitable at some point, folks. You've had a decade of zero-bound interest rates. You've had a record amount of monetary stimulus, i.e. money printing, monetization of our debt. What caused the problem of the Great Recession? What caused the Great Recession? Too low of interest rates for too long. What was our medicine? What was our solution by these geniuses at the Fed and at the federal government? Oh, I know, even lower interest rates for even longer period of time. This is not a science fiction novel. This is real life. And now all of this debt, it's coming home to roost. And now you've had the Federal Reserve trying to unwind their balance sheet. That is to say, quantitative tightening as opposed to quantitative easing. So all of that money that they threw out into the system, they're now trying to pull it back in. And they've been doing so through that method and also through increasing interest rates, which, again, at some point was inevitable. If you're at zero, how much lower can you go? Do you want to be like Japan and stagnant for 20 years? Do you want to be like the Europeans and have another banking crisis looming at their doorstep? They increased interest rates. The bubble's being pricked. If they didn't do it, the market would do it. Because people, consumers, households would be saturated with debt. And there might be liquidity out there, but they're not going to take it. So, no, I have a house here. The mortgage payment's enough as it is. Rent's expensive. It's enough as it is. I just bought a new car. I can't take on another one. I don't need a boat. I don't need a motorcycle. I have all this stuff. I have more than I can afford. This is debt saturation. You're at an end of a business cycle. It is slowing down. Not only here in the United States, but around the world. And the interconnectedness of the world is so complex, it's not even funny. But you have to respect that complexity because we're all a part of this machine. So we're going to wait. We're going to see what Chairman Powell says. We're going to see what these other central bankers say because we have the Bank of Canada coming out tomorrow, too, with their interest rate decision. It's my understanding that the market is anticipating that they are going to hold their current interest rate, but in their speech, in their conference, in their statement, it's going to be a dovish tone, which obviously is to the downside. So again, another race to the bottom with another major central bank. I mean, this is what's going to happen. So buckle up. We had the VIX gain 1%, the volatility index now trading at $14.09. Our good old buddies Deutsche Bank, who we talked about at length yesterday and will continue to do so as we hear more and more news coming out from Deutsche Bank, they lost another 3% trading today. I think it was actually closer to 3.5%, but who's counting? We have some of our commodities, which we haven't talked about recently. Copper was down 1% today. Aluminum gained a little bit. And lumber is now trading at $368 per 1,000 board feet. I know it was only a couple weeks ago we said that it was on one hell of a rally and actually broke through $400 and stayed there for a couple weeks. But now it is back below 400, trading at $368 per 1,000 board feet. So these are all, to me, leading indicators of what's going on. Aluminum has been trending down for quite a while. There's really been no relief rally at all, like we saw in lumber. There was a minor relief rally over the past couple of weeks with copper. I think that had to do more with supply issues, some mines perhaps going on strike or shutting down, but that seems to have abated. So again, copper's down 1% for the day, aluminum slightly up, and lumber is, again, trading at $368, well below $400. So we'll keep you updated on all that stuff. But what I really want to talk about today, and we did mention this yesterday on the Economic Podcast, was our volatility model. Because I had updated my volatility model, which I had not done in a while, just to see where things were. And again, the way I am defining volatility is a move, a daily close from the previous day of plus 1% or greater, or less than 1%, so a negative 1% or lower. So negative 1%, negative 2%, those types of things. So there's that type of swing. Any type of intraday swing, well, you can classify that as volatility. That's not how I am defining it, okay? So if we look at this model and I break it down across the Russell 2000, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, and the NASDAQ. So I have about 20-some years of data going back to 1997. And if you just graph it out and you simply count how many days of volatility exist, you get a simple bar graph, okay? But what's telling, at least to me, is the pattern that it shows. So if you happen to be in an environment of low volatility, let's just call that a stable environment, what happens after we are in that stable environment? Do we stay in a period of stability? Do we go to a period of volatility, somewhere in between? What tends to happen over the next year or two, or the next few years? Well, one of the lowest levels of volatility that we have witnessed across the board, but particularly with the NASDAQ, the Dow, and the S&P, was back in 2017. With the Russell 2000, we've had a couple low periods, one going back to 1997, and also 2017 as well. If we look at this low level of volatility in 2017, you tend to get quite an increase in the following year, which, by chance, is what we happened to witness in 2018. A lot of that coming at the back end, where we had that 10% correction. Then it turned into a 20% bear market, by Wall Street's definitions. So you have stability, let's say, in 2017. You had a higher period of volatility in 2018. So what would that mean now for 2019? Well, if you look back throughout this data over the past 20-some-odd years, 2019 should, in theory, by history, again, this is not set in stone, but if it should continue trending the way that it has in the past, we are going to witness at least a match of 2018's volatility, if not exceeding it. It's quite possible, folks, that it could stay where it is right now, that it might be lower than what it was in 2018. Again, this is not set in stone. But from my analysis, the volatility of this year will match that of last year's or exceed it. What does that mean if we're actually going to throw some numbers on it? So if you go back to 2017, again, we're on the Russell 2000. We had 45 trading sessions that meet my definition of volatility, 45. For 2018, on the Russell 2000, we hit 75 days of volatility. Again, a lot of that coming in the latter half of 2018. As we sit here through the first half of 2019, on the Russell 2000, we have witnessed 36 days of volatility. That means if it is to match last year's number at a minimum, it's going to have to double. So it would, the Russell 2000 in this case would simply have to continue with its current pace of volatile days from today until the end of the year, and it will match the volatility of 2018, which, based off of my analysis, is what I am anticipating as a base case. Could it exceed it? Sure could. That would also be more in agreement with historical trends. If it actually pulls back and goes lower, that would be more of an exception, not the rule, but it can happen. The last time that that happened, subsequently, with the Russell 2000 was back when you had a low period of volatility in 1997. You had a strong pickup in 98. You had a slight pullback in 99. And then, well, nearly 2000 happened. And we all know what happened in 2000 with the crash of the dot-com bubble. And if you were in the NASDAQ, you lost 78% over the next 2.5 years. So that is interesting to note that right now where we are with the Russell 2000, if this model should hold up, we can anticipate the volatility that we have witnessed thus far with the Russell 2000 to continue throughout the end of the year at a minimum to reach 2018 levels. If we should look at the S&P 500, okay, 2017 was pretty much a record low, again, going back to the data that we're looking at here, going back to 1997. In 2017, the S&P 500 had 8 days of volatility, again, as I define it, 8 days. In 2018, it had 64 days of volatility. So quite the increase from a year-over-year period in the volatility of the S&P 500. Where do we stand today? Currently at 18 days. 18 days. The volatility of the S&P 500 mimics that from the historical standpoint of the Russell 2000. It's not a one-to-one, but from the standpoint of what happens from a period of stability or low volatility to one of volatility, what happens during those next years? Well, again, if we're looking at this from the S&P standpoint, we are, again, 18 days of volatility in 2019. If we are to match last year's volatility, we're going to have to increase by a near factor of 3. 3 times we're going to have to increase. So that means, buckle up, if this volatility model should hold. Not set in stone. But this, again, would be the exception to the rule if this market should have a period of low volatility throughout the remainder of 2019. Now, if we were to look back for some historical context with the S&P 500, you saw low levels of volatility in 2004, coming off of the volatility from the dot-com era. Then you had low volatility through 2005, 2006, and a huge snap-up in 2007, 8, 9, and a slight pullback in 2010. So if history repeats itself, or if history rhymes, a factor of 3. So buckle up for some of the volatility on the S&P 500. Now, just for the sake of argument, obviously there's a lot of overlap between the S&P 500 and the Dow because the Dow is only comprised of 30 companies. But nevertheless, the same thing holds true. 2017 on the Dow, we had 11 days of volatility. Another record low given the data that we're looking at back to 1997. An increase in 2018, all the way up to 69 days. So 69 days from 11. We are now currently at 18 days. of trading volatility days on the Dow, the same as the S&P 500. So the same story here. If we're to get to where we were last year, it's going to have to increase by a factor of 3. So there will be an acceleration of potential selling in the S&P 500 and the Dow if it is going to get. Now, again, there could be a melt-up, and plus 1% could happen too. So you can still have this. It just happens to be, if you see this type of volatility, it tends to coincide with more down days as opposed to up. But this is not set in stone. This is not written in blood. So anything could happen. We are in the financial world of Oz. Don't forget it. And same thing going back to 2004, 5, 6, a big run-up in 07, 08, and 09. Now, lastly, if we look at the NASDAQ, same thing. 2017, we had 25 days of volatility. 2018, 84. So quite the jump from 2017 to 2018. Right now, where do we stand? At 37. So the NASDAQ is going to have to more than double to match where it was last year, thereabouts. So this is going to have to remain, this could stay on pace. This is sort of akin to the Russell 2000. But, what leads markets up is what leads them down. We talked yesterday about how Apple got a rare downgrade. Are these companies tapping out? What is the risk-reward profile? How much more money are you going to throw in to some of these companies at these lofty valuations? How many podcasts have we done talking about these market caps of $1 trillion or a near $1 trillion? How sustainable do you guys think that is? I don't think it's that sustainable, but that's my opinion. I mean, look at some of these graphs. I talk about this all the time. Just simply go on like Yahoo Finance and max out the graph and just look at it. It's exponential. These things tend not to be sustainable. If you look at the NASDAQ and you look at where it was back in 09 at its lows and where it was from recent highs, you're talking a gain of over 530%. You heard me right, over 530%. So for me to call basically my base case, which I have been stating here for quite a while, that we are likely to go back to 2016 levels at a minimum, in my opinion, depending on what part of 2016 you're looking at, that could be anywhere from 30% to a 40% decline, which, by the way, is in agreement with Ray Dalio and company of Bridgewater Associates, the world's largest hedge fund. We talked about that on a previous podcast a while ago. So I'm not the only one saying this. And I was saying my story long before that report came out, believe me. So if history rhymes, it might not repeat, but if it rhymes, buckle up. There's going to be some volatility ahead. Again, it could be to the upside. There could be a melt-up. I do not like talking out of both sides of my mouth on this. But that's the world we live in. You don't know what's going to happen, because the world is sitting on pins and needles awaiting comments and statements and tweets. Not fundamentals. Not whether people are working. Not whether it makes sense to put tariffs on everybody and their mother. Not whether or not ISM numbers and PMI numbers are rolling over, things that we talk about here all the time. What's going on with major countries that are major exporters? Are they picking up exports or are they slowing down? They're slowing down. What's going on with Germany? Powerhouse of Europe. They're slowing down. Not good, is it? Because Italy's slowing down. They continue to slow down. You have central banks all over the world getting dovish, growing more and more dovish. We just had the Reserve Bank of Australia cut interest rates again to a record low, and now there's market participants who are expecting and anticipating another rate cut in the near future. It's a race to the bottom. And on top of it, you have a president of the United States of America wanting to tell the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates because everybody else and their mother's doing it, so we got to do it too. I guess if your friends stick a fork in a socket, an electrical socket, you should follow suit. That's not how it's supposed to work. At all. I don't know what the president's angle is on this. Again, I don't know if he's trying to dance himself out of a box because he's taken ownership of this economy and he's obsessed and has taken ownership of this stock market and takes to Twitter and pats himself on the back and says, thank you, Mr. President, for these all-time highs. If he's looking for a scapegoat, if he's looking for an out to blame the Federal Reserve. For those of you who have been following this podcast, you know I voted for this president. Why? Not because of his antics. I don't personally like them. Not because of all of his tweets. I don't personally like all of them. Do I get a chuckle from them sometimes? Yeah, I do. But that's not the test of a president. I voted for him because he was ridiculing and criticizing properly the Federal Reserve, saying that low interest rates and quantitative easing was destroying this country, that it was benefiting the few at the expense of the many, that it was creating a bubble economy, that it was creating a bubble stock market. Now he's the president, and he wants more of the drug. He wants more of the sickness, and that I can't stand for. And now he's calling for an even weaker U.S. dollar. You know what that means, folks? That means everything you buy is going to become more expensive. It's going to take more dollars to buy the same amount of goods. Does that sound like something you want? I don't want it. But that's exactly what he's calling for because, well, Japan's doing it. And Mario Draghi and the ECB, they're doing it. And now you have out today the Bank of England coming out saying, well, with all of this uncertainty around Brexit and everything else that's going on, we're probably going to cut interest rates too. I mean, just jump on the bandwagon. There's no leadership. Just follow all these idiots around the world. Stagnant Japan, communist China, and the socialists out of Europe. That's a good model to follow, Mr. President. I strongly advise you stop listening to Peter Navarro or any other crazy voice that's in your head and allow this market to correct. Just allow it to correct. It's not your fault. It really isn't. You weren't part of this system. You weren't part of this swamp in Washington, D.C., for 20-some years, like so many other politicians who have served as our president or who have served in Congress have been. It's not your fault. You could have came in, you just could have cleaned house and said, what will be, will be. We're on a mission here as Americans. We got to straighten out this country. It's not going to be easy. It's going to take time, but we can do it because we're Americans. But that's not what we get, is it? We get insults. We get mockery. We get tweets. We get market abuse. We get market manipulation. We get an abuse of your executive power. I really hope you change course. Because this country, this world needs leadership in following a whole bunch of countries that have communist leaders, socialist leaders, and thinking somehow negative interest rates are going to solve the problem. I can assure you, Mr. President, it is not. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a pleasure having you as always. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out. We do love hearing from you. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.